So welcome everybody to another series of our Business Role Model podcasts. I'm very, very delighted to have with us today Angelo Moslank. He is a managing director of Thingotech, an early growth diagnostic startup. But he has seen many other perspectives of different companies in the world. He has been around in pretty much all continents. So we are very curious to learn from him and hear how he has been managing during and with the pandemic. And I already learned from him that, hey, you know, it's just another crisis and we just manage it as a normal crisis. And he has been also head of crisis management before in 2002, 2008, when we had other, like the avian flu crisis, other incidents and pandemics happening in the world. So he will talk a little bit about his, as he says, lab experience, without a control group. That's how he perceives the current situation. We are just managing, we are trying out, and hopefully keeping people safe, managing remotely with all the challenges that are involved and that affect all of us. But he seems to be very optimistic from what we have talked about before. And Angelo, very, very happy to have you here today. Please tell us a little bit, how have you managed to be and to be a role model in business in these times, and how did you make a difference also, of course, in managing people and managing the organization and getting your organization through the pandemic in such a good way? So
yeah,
hello, please tell us a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, hello. First, thank you for having me. It's a true pleasure to be here and talk a little bit and share my perspective on the current situation and the past and the future. So that was a big question that you just posed. There's a lot of it in it. So first of all, I do believe that we're currently all in a big experiment. You know, it feels like a big lab experiment. And there is positive and negative things to be considered, time will tell, you know, which of the concepts will be successful at the end of the day. So if we look at back, sort of when the whole situation evolved, we did indeed in the organization look at it as another crisis. You know, we had no idea that this would be a 2 year plus, you know, situation to deal with. So initially we really established a crisis management team to just fulfill the things that you do in crisis management, where actually the crisis management team takes over the responsibility for running some of the critical processes. And that's what we did, and we established, you know, alert levels and things like this and assessed where we are. One of the big concerns, obviously, initially was to keep everybody safe. And for us, it was not necessarily an option to send everybody home, because we're running a lab and we're running a production. People needed to be there to, you know, run the experiments, promote the science, and also produce the products that we produce. So we had a big debate whether it would be fair to, you know, send all the people in the office home and have everybody else come to the office or to wherever they're working. We're having two locations, one in Berlin and one in San Diego. And obviously there was also different situations in both locations because of, you know, the virus being differently managed and differently exposed in different points in time. So initially the big concern was to keep everybody safe, and I think we were reasonably successful and got comfortable with the thought to, you know, establish home offices and do all the things that, you know, we need to do to make sure that people can go on with their lives. We have a fairly young group of people with lots of, you know, men and women that have children. They, of course, had their own concerns, you know, around their families, and we just tried to make sure that they could go on with their day-to-day life and the critical situation that they had to deal with as much as possible. So that was sort of the first big challenge that we had to deal with. The second one I think we all experienced is, you know, how to make sure, how to get comfortable with the thought of managing teams remotely. And I found that very interesting that for people sort of my age, you know, a little bit, you know, with some gray hair and maybe even younger, that for us, at least for me, I was comfortable with it, you know, pretty much from the beginning because I also had this experience. What I found a very interesting finding is that especially younger people that were, you know, new managers running a group in, you know, in sales or in marketing, so they were really struggling with the thought of managing a team remotely, despite the fact that they all grew up with social media. You know, I would have thought it's the other way around, but it turned out, at least in my perception, it was that, you know, all the older guys and, yeah. and girls got comfortable with, but the youngest were really struggling.
But I've heard that from one of our other interview partners. And isn't that maybe also because the young people come to the office for a different reason?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do hope they come, you know, to work,
also
be productive and, you know, contribute to the cause of the company. But yeah, they do come to the office for additional reasons. Yeah.
Additional reasons.
Right. Which is maybe at the end, that's also one of my big concerns is long-term how to deal with that, you know, because we do have a little bit of potentially a lost generation of, you know, people coming out of school that are really struggling, you know, with this situation. How do you build a career online, you know? But maybe that's a different. So that was an interesting finding. And eventually, you know, we all got comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was an interesting learning, at least for me. I would have expected it all the other way around, but that's what happened. And then the third big challenge that we had as an organization, you know, we are just launching our products, and we are a company that has its customer base in the hospital. Actually, we provide diagnostic tools for intensive care. And for obvious reasons, the physicians and the nurses on intensive care units were busy with other stuff. And so we were about to launch our product, and there was just no access to customers, and that posed a big financial challenge for the organization. But you know, many companies have financial challenges out of the pandemic. We just had it for different reasons, not being able to access our customers, which then has on follow-on knock-on effects of the financing rounds and all the things that you need to do in a startup. That has since changed, and we found a way to engage with the customer base. And you know, the hybrid models that everybody talks about will also be something going forward, and I think we'll be successful in that environment. Mm-hmm. So that is sort of a little bit so how we started in dealing with the pandemic. Now, you can't keep these alert levels elevated forever.
Yeah.
You know, forever. That's just not possible. So you know, we eventually did away with the crisis management team. You know, it then moved things back to the responsibilities where they should be. And then established a smaller core team just to deal with most of the HR issues that we had to adapt with, you know, the rules and regulations that the government, you know, imposed on us, you know, constantly changed, and you had to keep up with those. So those were more HR related things and how to make sure that we continue to comply with all the rules, that we, you know, send out clear messages, what, you know, what are do's, what are don'ts, what are optional things, and continue to provide as much freedom to the people when it comes to, you know, how they spend their time, where they do their work, to also give them a chance to deal with their private situation. So we had some, you know, some people that were sick. We had some, you know, people that just had their children home for weeks and weeks, those were the ones that I was like to go back to the office. And yeah. We did never close the office fully. We allowed people back in the office if they, you know, would. We didn't allow sharing of office for obvious reasons, but we did allow them back in the office if they wanted to come.
Mm-hmm. And did you change anything substantially? I mean, now that you have moved from the initial task force, the crisis management, to more maybe a regular, sounds like a more operational task force that deals with upcoming issues. Is there any specific, was there a specific strategy behind it? How you deal with the ongoing status or?
I wouldn't call it a strategy, it was more tactics. We always, you know, being a medical company in that space, you know, having access to people that actually understand what they're talking about medically, and also, you know, we have statisticians, guys, and epidemiologists. We were quite successful in anticipating some of the changes.
Okay.
But that is just by nature of the people that we have in the organization, you know, and we just thought, okay, what do you see coming, and you know, should we change the rules already now?
Yeah.
On the other hand, we are a small organization. You know, we are 80 people in total, so that makes, you know, it's quite flexible. That makes it a lot easier than dealing with a very large organization where you have hundreds or thousands of people to deal with, and we only have two locations. So, That makes it quite flexible, and also the communication is a lot easier. I appreciate that, you know, large organizations have to have another planning cycle and maybe a more engaged, more strategic approach to dealing with these types of crises.
Mm-hmm. So you basically, I mean, you said to me once, yeah, you know, you're basically continuing as before now, or is it nevertheless in a different way?
It is in a different way, because ultimately you know, we all got comfortable with this new way of working, and then it also the whole, if you look back, these situations changed quite dynamically. We had some phases during the two summers that we have had, but things were pretty much normal. Mm-hmm. You know, and we did encourage people to come back to the office, so within the rules, but you know, with very low incidence rates, that was possible. So that gave us a little bit of a felt normality. And then, you know, once we had to sort of tighten the things a little bit more, people were already used to it, you know, and you know, moved back to their kitchen tables or wherever they did their work. So yeah, we adapted dynamically. So that is actually something that is a very positive sign, because we now have these, both of these, you know, scenarios that seem to work quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And the organization and all of us got comfortable with, you know, changing the where we work and how we work and how we interact with each other.
Are people happy with it? I mean, do you do like an employee survey or?
Yeah, we didn't do a formal employee survey. I think my impression from talking to everybody, and as we are a small group, so we can talk to almost everybody, they are as happy as you can be, you know. They appreciate the flexibility, and that is also something that I think we'll need to preserve, this flexibility going forward. They are also happy, interestingly, when they come back together as a group.
Mm-hmm. In person.
Yeah, they are in person. At the end, that is, you know, also who we are as human beings. You know, we're social animals. We want to be together, you know. that is something that we need to maintain. So I'm very skeptical about these, you know, ideas to close down offices totally. I'm also have question marks around these flexible workspace approaches. I mean, I personally like to sit at my table, you know, because that's what I'm used to. Maybe I'm a little bit conservative, But, you know, booking your, you know, sort of WeWork style table every day in the morning through an app, which is some companies do that. I understand the cost structure advantage of it, but, you know, we want to be at a place where we feel comfortable, that feels a little bit like home. Yeah. That we remain, you know, we do give people a place to sit and make sure that they're comfortable where they are. Then, of course, you know, a third of us are scientists. They work in the laboratory. They're always, you can't change that. They need to be there.
Yeah. When you talk about these tactics, what else is in there? I mean, how do you have like an overview or, you know, summary of what kind of tactics you use in these days, or what are the options for people, how to organize themselves, how to interact? Is that written down, or is it more like spontaneously?
We leave it up to them, and we define certain borders, you know, what, but they're mostly, you know, from a just a regulatory, you know, perspective or a legal perspective, but we leave it open to people to organize themselves, which works, or to the teams to organize themselves, because they have different tasks, and they are different style of people. Yeah, a marketing group works totally different than a regulatory or quality management group. Those are different personalities, different people. And, you know, the quality people, you know, they like structure. That's, you know, just who they are. And that's why they're successful in their roles. You know, the marketing people are more flexible, more open, more creative, you know, in a certain way. So I think it's one of the success factors going forward will also to, you know, make sure that they organize themselves in a way that suits their tasks and also who they are as a person.
And do they exchange these kind of informal ways of organizing teams?
I don't know the answer to that. I need to check. Yeah,
I'm curious.
I would think that. Because they do sit next to each other somehow, you know. That's a to do for me for the new year. You know,
it's interesting
that we share the learnings of
how you how they organize themselves, and that could also, you know, even if a certain way of organization doesn't fit maybe for the lab, if it's done like this in the marketing, but it's maybe an interesting team exercise, or, you know, some learnings
that is definitely
coming from that.
Interesting.
So from your perspective, you say this is, you know, it's running well. There are not many challenges at this point, or
there's not many challenges at this point, except that now with, you know, a fairly relaxed time that we experienced over the last months, you know, with another wave coming or being around the horizon, we do all get tired.
Yeah.
And that is a challenge. We all feel in our private personal lives, and that obviously triggers down to the professional life. And I think we need to make sure that we don't create additional complexity by making our professional lives more complex than it needs to be, and give people the space to just feel safe.
Is that a proactive process, or is it?
Yeah, that is a proactive process. Yeah. Well, yeah, proactive is a big word, you know. We do, HR and myself and in the management group, we do talk about these things, you know, how do we make sure that we keep the motivation high, that the overall situation doesn't sort of trickle down into the company and make things unproductive. And just by, you know, one anecdote that we did, we were planning a big party at the end of the year. Obviously that didn't happen. But what we did to celebrate the end of the year and ultimately a successful year, we organized an outside event, you know, where we hired somebody to do a professional firework.
Oh, okay.
And that was good fun. It was totally safe. We were all there with our masks, and you know, we did have a little bit of Glühwein, which is this German, you know, spice wine drink that we like to have. And you know, I had a 15-minute firework, and everybody, you know, they brought the kids, and everybody was good fun. So these types of events to make sure that we stay together as a group, you know, and that we're also emotionally somehow tied together, I think are important. And hopefully, we do something again, you know, in 2 or 3 months to make sure that people have a chance to also interact personally with each other.
Yeah. So the bonding experience.
Bonding, yeah.
Outside.
The bonding is outside. Yeah.
Yeah.
The mask, right? Yeah.
That's a great example. So, so do you have any other special topics or maybe good examples in particular also from your workforce? You mentioned you talked a lot about the self-organization. Is there any specific team that you would like to highlight and say, look, you know, they really were very creative in how they did it and they achieved great results with it?
Yeah, it's not so much the team. What I found very interesting to observe is how certain people then try to cheer up the group. And take responsibility for organizing, for example, the fireworks. You know, I mean, that was just one example. That was an idea that somebody had, say, oh yeah, it's a cool idea. But there's also the little things, you know, how they make sure that we have, you know, the virtual coffee meetings that we all now, you know, have occasionally. And that we did not really organize from a management side, it then happened individually. And it sometimes was triggered by people where you would not have expected that they would actually step up and do it. Mm-hmm. That was very interesting to see. And it, you know, there's always these informal structures in each organization that actually run the company. You know, it's not the org chart that runs the company, it's the informal structure. And we identified, and some people, you know, were just coming from some places where we're like, oh, that is interesting, you know. And then, you know, people sort of evolved around them and took it as a positive example. So that's what I found quite nice. Obviously, again, you know, in a large organization, it might be more difficult to accomplish that. But in a smaller group, that was definitely nice to see.
Were those the people you would have expected?
Not necessarily.
Interesting.
Not necessarily.
And do you think, I mean, this, you know, informal organization, of course, is one of the big topics, we are working on all the time, that, you know, the coffee machine basically rules the organization and the conversations you have while brewing your coffee. Right. So it sounds like in your organization, they kind of translated that easily in a virtual setting.
Yes, they did, but typically within their groups. Mm-hmm. And that is where, you know, things then become challenging. And that's something we need to watch long term. And you mentioned it in the beginning. The interaction between the teams, you know,
it's
a lot more difficult if you don't have the water cooler discussions. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Because there's teams interact with each other, but they interact because they are sharing a task.
Yeah.
But they're not interacting with each other unless they, you know, knew each other from before, or they're friends, or have some other sort of, you know, relationship that, you know, joined the same day or whatever that ties them together. But that is that I find real challenging also, how to establish that we make sure that the different groups interact with each other in a more informal way. Mm-hmm. This is where, you know, all the wonderful, beautiful online tools that we now have, which technically work perfect. You know, I mean, they come into the way of organizing these cross organizational, cross team changes.
Is there, do you have, as a last question, do you have any ideas at this point how you're going to address this issue? Because, we will probably continue to work as it is, with all the different waves coming up and down, the interfaces of different teams or cross functional teams. Is there an idea, or do you have a secret recipe how to address it?
I definitely have no secret recipe. I think the one way to create is by giving different groups shared tasks, so that there's actually some meaningful work item that they solve together. And we have a few of these things that we can establish, and they also are necessary from a business perspective. Mm-hmm. But then to make sure that actually the interaction happens, and then hopefully something will develop out of that. If we remain in a situation like we are currently, where almost everybody works from home, that will be a big challenge for the future to make sure that we hold on to the right spirit, and there's actually something like a company culture developing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there are issues you think you will have to deal with in the near future
I think we will have to address them and make sure that we people don't stay in their silos.
Yeah. So if the pandemic lab experiment continues, it needs to be rethought a little bit.
It needs to be rethought a little bit, yeah. Maybe in closing, but so my biggest concern is actually around how to integrate new people. Mm-hmm. And especially when they come, when they come right out of school or from university or from, whatever education they happen to have, and how to make sure that they become part of the network of the organization. And that, I think, is, I'm very optimistic about people that have sort of experienced, life before. Mm-hmm. We are adapting, it's all fine. But the big question mark I have is how to start, in a company, and how to build your informal network and how to build a career without being able to just observe, who goes to lunch with whom, all these little things that are interesting,
human side of the enterprise.
And if you talk to, some of these, the young creative, folks that we have, they are really they have a fear of missing out.
Yeah.
And that is something that we need to proactively address in a smart way. And looking forward to people like you to share your ideas, and the research of what is successful and what is maybe not so successful. But that's the big lab experiment.
I was about to say, we have to include you in the big lab experiment.
Right. Yeah.
And we have to, as we always do, exchange our experiences with other organizations. And but I think you're raising a very, very important point, and I'd love to continue that maybe in a second edition of our conversation, because we have to, of course, work on the next generation's opportunities and how to integrate them into the workforce, and also consider those interests and make sure we do not lose the human side of the organization, which is so crucial to be successful, actually. So
that's a very important point.
So please keep us posted what you learn, and I look forward to continuing that conversation in the next series. Thank you so much, Angelo. Do you have any final advice to our listeners?
No, I have. Well, I think we have to stay optimistic, you know, and look beyond, you know, the day-to-day challenges, and otherwise you get depressive. Doesn't help you, you know, it doesn't solve anything. So, you know, you have to be optimistic. Sometimes it's hard to do so, but if you, you know, run through life with that approach, it's good in a crisis and in a normal situation. So that's my only advice, and you know, and stay positive, and ultimately I think we'll be all fine, you know, and be successful, and you know, continue to have a meaningful, you know, professional and private life.
And I'm sure with, you know, people like you and the management, that's, you know, going that direction. And thank you so much for contributing as a business role model here. And I look forward to our next interaction and conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day and weekend.
Thank you. Same for you.